We had 1 week as figuring out how to be an empath. What did we find out? Share with me. I saw a few people made comments on the class page, and I'm sure so much more happened that we didn't hear about. So I'd like to hear what you took away from last week and what you practiced.
The big practice was the not saying, I don't know. Uh-huh. And I don't care. That was very helpful this week. I found that helped a lot. That was like a conscious energy shift. Every time I said that, I found power in that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. I was on a call today and I said, I don't know, about 20 times, and I felt so guilty after.
Good. I'm glad you felt guilty. That's the goal of this class, is make you feel more guilty.
I noticed it, though. So that's the first step, I think.
Yeah. What did you notice about yourself every time you said that?
That I was like, this isn't a word, but like unvalidating myself.
Invalidating. Yeah.
Invalidating. Yeah, that's the word. Yeah, that when I do that, it kind of like takes power away from me and like dumbs me down a little bit, which is, I think I've done for a really long time.
Yes, we do that. Good. Oh, I'm glad you noticed it. But you don't have to feel guilty, okay?
Okay. Yeah, that's the next step.
Yeah, right. Okay, and who else?
This is Lisa. I felt the same. I didn't have any I don't knows, and I didn't actually have I don't care until I went back to work on Monday. And that was really a powerful experience for me, because I actually do care. Mm-hmm. But I say I don't care, and I had to evaluate what the truth was for me. And that really brought me a lot of awareness, and already I've shifted.
And what did you feel in that shift? What did you notice?
I felt like I was a lot more grounded, which is one of my biggest issues. And I felt like it kept me in myself and in the earth.
Yes. Remember I said that boundaries are formed from self-definition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was really powerful, and it was unbelievable that already, I feel like, oh my God, 1 week, yay. But there was something else that I thought was interesting that I wanted to share. And that was the idea when you were talking about dealing with adults.
Hmm. Don't you wish there were more of those in the world?
Yeah. Yeah. And there are times when I wonder if I'm an adult. So
right.
That was interesting. But more than that was that I noticed that the people who are the hardest for me are those who are projecting outward more than inward. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure I'm aware when people have unrealistic expectations of me. And that was interesting, because I'm not sure, and I think this is happening and I'm not aware. So this is something I was hoping I could work on.
Yes. Well, first of all, I would assume that 100% of people have unrealistic expectations of you and the rest of the world.
Okay.
I would start with that as a truth and work backwards.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Because people do. And it's hard not to. I'm not shaming or blaming. It just
right.
is that we don't often get outside of ourselves into some kind of objective reality where we're not projecting some of ourselves onto the world. I mean, that's the act of consciousness. So, but as empaths, in order to protect ourselves from being blindsided, because we tend to see the best in people.
Mm-hmm. Always.
Right? And so when we get stuck into the on position for that perspective, then we end up being disappointed over and over and over again. And we also feel more and more depleted because of that energetic exchange. And so there's, let me put it this way. I'm going to reframe it a little bit here with a bigger perspective. Again, I believe that the consciousness of an empath is starting in unity consciousness. Mm-hmm. That the very first experience that an empath has all the time is feeling connected with everyone and everything. Mm-hmm. Is that fairly true for everyone here? Mm-hmm. Yeah. What you have to understand is that is unity consciousness. That is unity with the divine. That's unity with Mother Earth. That's unity with the conscious, with the cosmos. It's a very, very high frequency consciousness. Now, I want you to take that in. It's not pat yourself on the back for it. It just is what you got, the gift you came in with. And I want you to pause to appreciate this. It's you didn't get trained to use it properly. You weren't told what it was, but you do have this phenomenal achievement over many, many lifetimes and many, many universes of being able to enter this lifetime with unity consciousness as your ground of being.
Wow.
Yeah, take that in.
That's hard for me to kind of accept, to be honest, because I feel like being an empath has made me a little less grounded sometimes.
Of course it has. You haven't been trained.
Yeah.
You haven't been mentored and trained about how to work with consciousness. Mm-hmm. And so then as a result, all this dismissal and wounding and lack of acknowledgement and lack of validation creates this heavy covering that over the energy field that takes you away from that unity consciousness on one level, but instinctually you're still feeling it.
Yeah.
Okay. So you haven't been trained to use it well. And so unity consciousness is a state of consciousness, and it's not the state of consciousness that you want to use in everyday life. So we need to learn the proper place for when to activate and be in that unified state versus letting it go to the background and letting the personality be informed by it, but not overshadowed by it. In other words, you don't want to walk around merged with everyone, because if only if it's true what Judith Orloff says, that maybe 15 to 17% of the population are empaths, then that leaves a lot of people that won't understand where you're coming from.
Yeah.
Okay. Makes sense.
Okay. And they really have no idea where you're coming from. Mm-hmm. Just like you have no idea where they're coming from, they have no idea where you're coming from. There's a big gap there. Mm-hmm. And so when I say assume that 100% of the people have unrealistic expectations, it's one of the realities that empaths need to accept in order to protect themselves, understand themselves as they're interacting with the 87% of the population that don't have the same brain profile they do.
Okay.
And it's, I mean, like I said, we're all, I'm looking at the whole world being on a spectrum, that there is no real normal for brain function any longer. And that the definitions of the bandwidths on the spectrum of brain functioning is going to get more and more detailed over the next 5 to 10 years, so that we're going to have a whole different understanding and focus on how to translate and communicate from different brain styles to other brain styles. So that's coming. We're not there yet, but it is coming. So it's important to say to yourself, okay, I know I'm in unity consciousness. I know I'm connected to everyone. But right now I'm talking to someone that has no sense of that unity consciousness at all.
Mm-hmm.
And by saying that, it brings me back to myself and takes me out of that merge.
Mm-hmm.
Can you feel, does that make sense? Can you feel that?
Yeah.
And I come back to myself, and that's more self-definition that then creates the boundary.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a judgment. It's absolutely not a judgment. It's just what is.
Hey, this is Jared.
Uh-huh, Jared.
So it sounds like you're saying you're taking the time to observe and tell yourself kind of what you're observing, not make a judgment about it, and just kind of let yourself know kind of where the other person is at.
Yes, very well spoken.
And how to readjust yourself and your expectations, I guess.
Yes, and in one sense, empaths have a tendency to morph, to adjust to morph, mm-hmm. instead of adjust to more self-definition.
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, you want to morph to more self-definition.
That's hard.
Yes, it's really hard for an empath to do. Just like Lisa was saying, she was surprised at what she really thought and felt instead of, I don't care. She really did care, and she really did have some opinions and thoughts. And some of those are going to be judgmental. And some of those are going to be comparative, and some of those are just not going to be pretty sights, but that's okay. It's okay. Mm-hmm. Because the more self-definition an empath can get, the more it gives you a platform for growing and becoming more of who you are. Did any of you remember the Woody Allen movie Zelig? Did anyone ever see that?
Yeah, so long ago.
Yeah.
Remember how he turned into every single person he was with?
Yes.
Remember that? That is the story of an empath.
Story of my life. Wow.
I mean, rewatch that movie.
Okay. What was it called again?
Zelig, Z-E-L-I-G.
Okay.
And it was an early Woody Allen movie that got looked over. I mean, it wasn't like a big hit like the rest of his movies at the time. But oh my God, I remember seeing, it must have been, I don't know, the late 70s maybe? I don't know if it, something like that.
That sounds right.
And I remember seeing that. I go, oh my God, that's who I am. You know, it's like I'm just becoming whoever I'm with, and who am I? And so the self-definition goes back to the two-year-old. That's what happens when we're two. And when we get a chance to bounce off of boundaries, I mean, that's what, you know, a parent's supposed to set up some boundaries, and then a two-year-old is supposed to kick and scream, right? Mm-hmm. And say, no, 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 no. You never hear yes out of a two-year-old. And so, but the developmental stage there is being able to say no, being able to kick and scream, and still have a structure to bounce off of. It helps you create that self-definition. But empaths are usually born. And it doesn't take more than a few months of being on the planet before you start adjusting and adapting to everyone else, just instinctually through your nervous system. And you start feeling the pain of your parents and anyone else that's around you. And by the time an empath is 1 year old, they've pretty much disappeared already. Can any of you remember back to being like 2 or 3 years old and feeling the pain or suffering of a parent or a friend?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah?
Yes.
I think some of my first words were, are you okay?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. That's not the norm. Yeah. I'm watching my 4.5-year-old granddaughter, who is like empath right out the gate. And I could be talking to my daughter on the phone, and we're laughing and everything. And then she might start describing to me something that happened at work. And in less than a second, Harper, who's across the room playing with a toy, runs over to her mom and says, what are you talking about? And my daughter's phenomenal with her. My daughter tells her exactly what we're talking about. So that she gets the picture that she doesn't have, and she says it in a way that's, you know, she's got it handled kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But I'm telling you, she is there in the blink of an eye. I hear her over the phone saying, Mommy, what's going on? What's happening? What are you talking about? What's wrong?
Yeah.
Right?
Is your daughter an empath too?
Not as much as I am or Harper is.
Mm.
And she's a therapist, so she's worked through a bunch of this. And we raised both girls with awareness of this. But she understands it, and she sees it in Harper, and she's doing really well with it. But it's amazing how quickly. And then we have another 4.5-year-old grandson with my other daughter. He's oblivious. There is not an empath cell in that kid's body. and they're 6 weeks apart, and I'm just watching the two, you know, as they're growing up and what they're expressing. No, not Grant. You know, like Mason. You wanna play a game? Nope. It's just like no, without anything attached to it. Nope. Mm-hmm. You know, and Harper would say, "Well, you know," she would try to play with me, and then she'd get bored, and then she'd start sucking her thumb, and then she'd like roll over, and like all this. Then she'd start whining, and she's already doing all these behaviors that she's trying to squirm out of something without saying, I don't want to do this right now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so Shauna and I are continually reinforcing with her, she can say, I don't want to do this now. You don't have to do it because Grammy wants to do it or because Mommy wants to do it. You have a choice. But can't you just feel that? Like what the sequence that I just said with about her, you know, starts squirming and then she sucks her thumb and then she rolls over and she starts whining about something. Mm-hmm. And so instead of just being able to say, I don't want to do this, all these other behaviors start to muddy up her own feelings.
You think like a product of that could be people developing bad tempers or anger issues or something when they're an empath and they don't know how to say no, but inside they want to, and it just kind of builds up in them?
Yeah, and they may not even know that they don't want to know, say that they may not know that they want to say no.
Yep.
It can be that covered up.
Makes sense.
Okay. It can be that covered up that you don't even know you don't want to do something. Mm-hmm. Which is why that practice of forbidding yourself from saying, I don't know and I don't care, starts to get you back to knowing what you do care about and what you do think and what you do know. That's like a first step as in an adult way, you know, to start working your way back to who you are. And it can be really surprising because you can think you're the nicest person in the world when you're an empath. And then when you find out what you're really thinking and feeling, you may not be so nice, but you're not bad. You just have a character. You're sculpted with preferences and creative ideas and your own unique expression that's not perfect, but it could create conflict. It can create, you know, disturbance. Other people may not like it and they'll judge you, and then we feel them judging us, and then the whole thing starts again. Mm-hmm. So you can see this is a process. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, there, that was a long answer to your question.
That's great though. But what about the whole piece of this is Lisa again. What about the whole piece of I'm having unrealistic expectations of myself? Mm-hmm. So does that mean that if I am around someone and I notice that suddenly I'm having expectations of myself that I normally wouldn't have? Is that what you mean by that?
Oh, no. If you are around someone else and you start to feel expectation of yourself, mm-hmm. that might be you mirroring their expectations of themselves or you.
Okay, I see. Okay.
And that's why you have to be able to accept that you do that so mm-hmm. that you can use it as what would it be, like an indicator that mm-hmm. something's resonating between you and that person, and that's information.
Mm-hmm. I have a question.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so I'm one of those friends that just always happens to call another friend. They notice that whenever they're going through something, it's like they just keep coming into my mind, and then I'll reach out to them, and then, you know, check it out and find out, yes, that's right. But I guess if we're developing these self boundaries and I'm taking on or picking up these things, would it be more beneficial for me to almost not reach out or be more selective of reaching out to those people?
Yes, what a great idea.
Because then I'm setting because I'm starting it just by reaching out to that person and just saying hello and how are things going or whatever. But then usually they're in some kind of emotional crisis or something's going on in their life. So I guess I'm learning that, you know, and then I just realized I'm one of the people listen to, and like they want to talk to the problems, but that's because I reach out at the right time of when they're always going through stuff.
Mm-hmm. And so do you like doing that? I mean, do you like being in that position with your friends?
I'm used to it. Yes. Yes and no. In some ways I like to support my friends. At the same time, I get tired a lot. And so I sometimes resent being always the helper. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I loved your idea about developing selectivity. That it's not just a reflex. So the first thing I think, okay, so I'm going to tell you my process with this. Because okay. I'm that person too. Well, I used to be, not any longer. But so then it was like, yes, it always looked like I was the helper person, that I was always there for people. Then when I needed someone, no one picked up on me that I needed something. Mm-hmm. So they weren't calling me the same way I would be calling them. And mm-hmm. so then I would get resentful on mm-hmm. that level and feel like the relationship was not reciprocal and that it was uneven and I was unhappy and angry, and that's not good. And then, yes, I'd get tired and I could miss dinner with my family because I'm talking on the phone with this person at odd hours or, you know, all kinds of stuff. And on one level, I'm feeling good that I'm needed, I'm helpful, and all this stuff. And then that exhaustion sets in. And then once the exhaustion sets in, then I'm feeling everything they're going through.
It I can relate.
Right? Mm-hmm. It doesn't cut off because I've merged my little tentacles with them and I've become their being, and now I'm living their life and not mine.
And then I'm always thinking and worrying about that person at that time.
Yes.
And if there's more than one, it does get very drained.
Yes, it does. But the most important thing is I'm living their life and not mine.
Mm-hmm.
Listen to that. I'm living their life and I'm not living mine.
And then I just reach a burnout stage where I withdraw.
Right, and then you still can't live your life.
Well, I have learned some techniques to separate myself from people energetically, but the whole point is I'm still picking up everything and I'm still reaching out. So I do think that there needs to be some more boundaries around that.
Yeah, I'm glad you've learned some techniques, good. And to understand the dynamic in terms of how it's affecting you and how selective you may need to be. And also, what else in you wants to take up some space in your life?
Mm. And yeah, making that decision to have more of that.
Right. Like, do you have a sense of that? Like, is there something else that you'd like to develop within yourself?
Of course. It's also I think I'm still in that awareness stage where I'm seeing certain patterns and I want to change them, but I'm not sure entirely how to do that to get to that place where I feel really balanced with people.
Right. Okay. So we will work with this, but that just introducing this idea of living your own life, this is for everyone, is a very important concept for empaths. Unity consciousness even unity with the divine, does not mean that you disappear in that unity. It means that from that unity, you grow as an expression, a unique seed, an expression of that unity consciousness, where the unity consciousness is the soil and the center core of your being. But there's always the expression. If we didn't have the expression that rose out of the unity consciousness, nothing would exist. So defining who you are, as kooky, as unusual, or as, I consider myself a middle C person. You know what I mean? On the piano, middle C. It's like milk. You know, it's like this bland middle C average person, right? And I always felt like that. And then the more I started self-defining, the weirder I got. But that's who I am. And you start to find out that you're very unique and have very exquisite things to offer the world and yourself when you give more space to becoming you. Mm-hmm. You don't give up the deep high frequency consciousness that's always in the background, and you return to it through meditation and energy and things like this, and you source from it. But you still have to have, it's like that's the in-breath, and then you need the out-breath.
That's so interesting you say that, because I just feel like I take the in-breaths, and then I call them bad butterflies, not like I'm excited butterflies, but just like bad butterflies in my stomach, this like tension that I keep there. And then I laugh because I say I like Lamaze all the time when I get stressed. I'm like, just like letting it out.
Yes. I think that a lot of empaths might feel like they're stronger on the in-breath than on the out-breath.
Mm-hmm. Yes, me too.
Mm-hmm. And so it's scary to become your true self when you've been judged all your life for being too sensitive or told that what you perceive is wrong. And when you've taken responsibility for everyone else.
I also find that it's almost like I attract certain people that they know certain weaknesses about me, and they almost like will twist it when maybe it's just some of it is empath stuff, but like exactly like you're being too sensitive, and like they discount and minimize.
Mm-hmm. Yes, they do. And like I said, one of the things that empaths get accused of is being codependent.
Yep, I can see that.
Yeah. And it can look like codependence, but it's actually coming from a different place. It can eventually end up as codependence, but it really is stemming from a very different place. It's stemming from the place of I am you and you are me. And that unity consciousness. Mm-hmm. So it's different in quality and where it starts from. But empaths are called a lot of names and really judge quite a bit.
What can you tell me about maybe experience you have with empaths who have kind of disassociated from their feelings or from like the relationship with their body or their emotions, different things like that? Because I think of when I was a kid and some of the experiences that I had either, you know, at home or around the school grounds with bullies or different things, and picking up things from other people and not, and getting older and trying to understand how to sort them. Mm-hmm. And I just think of some of my friends who I see as empaths and how they, we've all kind of had to learn how to survive and not necessarily how to show our strengths as empaths and not control, but
kind of manage.
Manage, yeah. Manage in a healthy way, mm-hmm. I guess.
Good. So here's the concept we're going to start with here. Our body is our instrument. So a sports person or a dancer or an actor, their body is their instrument. And an empath's body is their instrument. So I want you to just feel your connection to your body, because it's a very sensitive instrument. And through that instrument, you are receiving a billion more bits of information per second than the average body. You're a supercomputer, not just a desktop or a laptop. But pick this, and they've measured this, okay? The empath's nervous system is receiving such a large amount of information from the environment and from other people and from their own thoughts and feelings that it's enormous compared to the normal nervous system. So can you relate to that, everyone?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes.
Got it. Okay. And so if you are receiving that much information and no one has taught you how to process it, what are you going to do? You're going to dissociate. You're going to separate off from the body because it's just too hard. Let's just take that in for a moment. And let's pat your heart a little. Put your hand on your heart and just say, oh my God, you know, you're such a sensitive instrument and I have not known what to do with you. It's like having a Stradivarius and like, you know, slinging it over your shoulder and going hiking or something. This is a very sensitive instrument, your body. And you can sense how you're like you're those little sensors that are like little antenna going out like from every cell of your body are picking up information from your immediate environment, from the country, from around the world, from anything you've heard on the news, from people you don't know. I sometimes have visitations from tribal people in Brazil. I mean, the amount, once you get clear and you start understanding what you're picking up, you can feel like you're in communication with people all over the planet and also all over the cosmos. That's how sensitive an empath's nervous system is. Okay. And again, we were born before the time when empaths were recognized as a brain profile. There's all these magnetite crystals in the brain of a empath. There's definitely they, you know, there's a whole physiological nervous system profile of an empath that's different. And look at how this could be used, and this is just a tiny little aside. In Vogue or Cosmopolitan, one of the two, one of those that I was reading in a doctor's office, I came upon this article by this nurse in Colorado Springs, and she is an empath, and everyone in the hospital knew of her ability to feel other people. And so what they did was they stationed her in the neonatal and baby part of the hospital where these children could not communicate. And she could stand next to them and tell the doctors exactly what the babies were feeling.
Wow.
That's what we're looking forward to.
Mm.
That kind of ability, use of our ability, and the recognition and validation of it. Isn't that, wouldn't that be wonderful?
Mm-hmm. For sure.
So whatever your particular type of empathy is, you would be able to contribute very specifically from that. But we're not quite there yet on a societal level, but that's where we are heading. And it's because we are our instrument. We don't need an MRI. We don't need a stethoscope. We don't need a computer screen. It's all that information is swirling around in us. And that's way too much for a human being in a culture that doesn't recognize it and doesn't teach you how to organize that information. It's like you don't have the operating system to interpret the input into an organized, take all the ones and zeros and make them into words and pictures and sounds. Okay. So I'm still with you, Jared, okay? So do we understand that right now? Does everyone?
Yeah.
Got it? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So when we have that much input coming in, we will decide in some form. We can never shut it down. It can never, ever be shut down. But then we do what my little Harper does. We start squirming. We start sucking our thumb. We start whining. We do all kinds of things to separate off from the feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Okay. Because we don't have the ability to interpret it. We don't have the operating system in place. And that's why the self-definition and working with the I don't know, I don't care, and acceptable, unacceptable is such an important practice.
Mm-hmm.
And it's for the adult to fill in that space where they've disappeared. And there's many, many practices. I'm sure you've been exposed to different things in your search for how to work with this. There's many things that work. But to understand why you need to do it is what I'm trying to convey right now. So with this very sensitive system that you have and the amount of unawareness in the world, that adds another layer of confusion. So let's say we had a world where there was a percentage of people that were actually grounded and clear. That would be pretty nice. Then the information coming into us would already be organized. But that's not how the world is. The world is made up of people right now, at this time, of very ungrounded, very disorganized on the emotional and mental level. And so what you're receiving is confused information. So not only are you overwhelmed and don't know how to interpret all the information, but the information coming in, it would be like information going into your computer that's all gobbledygook. And so whatever comes up on the screen doesn't make sense. So there's this other layer that's going on where we've, this culture that we've developed as Western culture has taken itself to the most extreme place of confusion and dissociation from true self. So everything that's coming in is confusing. This is not judgmental, it just is how it is. And if you look at it on an energetic level, and if you could pause for a moment and get quiet for a moment. Just feel your, did some of you do the grounding practice?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So feel your feet in the seat. Okay. Feel your breath. And I want you to bring to mind a person that's going through something that you're friends with. And I want you to imagine what their energy field looks like. It should only take a second to get a screenshot of their energy field. Got it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so without telling us who that person is, give me some examples of what you see.
Blurry.
Blurry is one?
Yeah.
Okay, so if you're with a friend who's blurry, how are you going to feel?
Blurry.
Right? And how frustrating is that?
Yeah, it's frustrating, but I want to help always.
Right. So we got two blurry people trying to help each other. Okay. So, okay, someone else tell me what your screenshot was of a person.
Yellow? Yeah, she's yellow.
Okay, what tone of yellow?
Like a lemon. It's like a light lemon yellow.
Is she going through something?
Yeah, she's getting married this weekend.
Oh, so that's a positive thing.
Okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good. So that's a nice read on a person. Okay. And then how does that make you feel?
It's so funny. I'm anxious for her. I'm excited for her. I feel everything that she feels.
Oh,
all day long.
Great.
I try not to. I try to have good boundaries, but yeah, I do. I do.
Uh huh. Okay. And does she enjoy sharing those feelings with you?
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So that's a positive then. Okay. Mm-hmm. What's another screenshot?
I envisioned someone with holes in their aura.
Ah, okay. And when you're around them, how do you feel?
Well, they don't live in the same.
They could be in China. Doesn't matter.
Unbalanced.
Okay. Unbalanced is how you feel when you're with them.
Yes. Right?
Okay. So that's your read of that person. That they're not balanced.
Yes.
Okay. Okay, good. Another screenshot.
I saw dark with like bursts of orange trying to get through.
Okay. And then how do you feel around that person?
Very worried for them.
Oh, so let me ask you this. Do you think that they're worried Are they in a state of worry a lot?
Yeah, and a instability, I can see.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So this is how I walk around the world, taking these screenshots. Instant screenshot to help me understand why I'm feeling what I'm feeling and what the other person is feeling. And it helps me separate out. And here you are using your ability, your intuitive ability that you came with, and you're using it to help yourself. But you might not have ever thought to do that because you might have felt like, oh, you know, I'm not going to get it right. Or, you know, it's just too hard to do, but you can do it.
Sometimes helping myself has always made me feel selfish.
Yes. Oh, there we go. That's so classic empath.
Yeah.
Any thought of doing anything for yourself, you feel selfish. It's very classic. But okay, but let's finish this and then we'll go on to that, okay? Mm-hmm. So what do you think about doing this screenshot exercise?
It's really powerful. Yeah. Cool.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So remember, we took a moment to ground and get quiet to do it. But you can get very good at this, and this is one of the abilities you came in with. So we can use it for a positive effect.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Okay. So back to the idea that Jared brought up. Our bodies are our instrument. It's a very sensitive instrument. We're being bombarded by a billion times more bits of information than the average person. I want you to take that in. It's Harper versus Mason. Mason's my other grandson. He's not taking in any. He's like in his own world. And Harper's taking in all this information. Even mm-hmm. when her mom's talking to me on the phone, she is aware. Okay? So you have to appreciate, first and foremost, that your instrument is receiving a lot more information than other people get. And they don't understand that you're getting all that information. They make no allowance for it. So, you know, all the work that's been done on the highly sensitive person, Elaine Aaron, are some of you familiar with the highly sensitive person profile?
Yes.
Okay. And I have a podcast on that, on my Earth Love Spirit podcast. There's a really nice interview with someone about that. So the highly sensitive person is a different profile than the empath. The highly sensitive person is sensitive to the environment. They're sensitive to the sound that the heater makes in the schoolroom, or the fluorescent lights, or the clothing texture on their body. They're overwhelmed by the textures and sounds and sensations of the world. Okay. The empath is that plus all the subtle information that's coming in from the emotional, mental, psychic, invisible realms. In addition to the physical senses, the subtle senses, the empath is sensitive to. Okay. Now, my point is that they started doing research on the highly sensitive person maybe 25 years ago, scientific research. And so my daughter, who's the other one's a second grade teacher, knows if someone's a highly sensitive student in second grade, she's aware as a teacher what could be interfering with her learning. Okay? Mm-hmm. There's an awareness. Here's a profile, here's a student, this is how they're interacting in the room. Maybe I need to turn the fluorescent lights off when she's taking a test. Maybe I have to, do something with the temperature in the room because she can't sit in here like this. My daughter's aware. We are not at the point where teachers and adults are aware of what children, empaths, are going through. The same way an autistic child is sensitive to all kinds of sounds and stimulation, and they're starting to know much more about that. But empaths still are like bottom of the list still. They're just starting to do some research on the empath profile. I'm just going to pause. So what I want to say to you, and I think I said this last time, when I grew up in the 50s, if there was someone in the class that was always the bad kid, he was usually the one, or she was usually the one with ADD, but they didn't know what ADD was at that time, right? And so now we have the too sensitive person, the whiny, too sensitive, overwhelmed person that no one knows what to do with because it's not been classically identified yet. Okay? So empaths are still at a disadvantage in a certain sense that they haven't done the scientific research. There's some done. It's being done. And that's why they know that there's more of these magnetite crystals in the empath's brain than the rest of the population. They've already determined that. And they've also determined that there's more mirror neurons. Have you heard that term?
No.
So mirror neurons are what cause you to mirror someone else's feelings, thoughts, expressions, and what creates empathy. Normal range empathy, not being an empath. So our brains have a certain number of mirror neurons. Empaths' brains have many more mirror neurons. Isn't that amazing?
Oh, kind of annoying, to be honest.
It is, I know. Although that's what allows the nurse in Colorado Springs to tell the doctors what a preemie baby is feeling. Mm. Okay? Mm-hmm. There's going to be a place for all of this, and we're at this transitional phase. What I'm trying to show you is they're starting to do the research. Once they do maybe 10 years more of research, this is going to be really well understood and then appreciated. But I remember being a child in class, and there were days when I could process all the information that I was being taught, and there were days that it was just totally fuzzy, like it just wouldn't go into my brain. And when I look back on it, I realize it was the teacher's state of being.
Mm-hmm.
That how she was feeling that day that made the difference between whether I could be clear or not. Can some of you relate to that at all?
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So this goes back to this idea that we are receiving a lot of confused information. And that's why it's really important to, like Jared said, identify, recognize the state of being of the person that you're interacting with so that you don't take all the responsibility for what's happening in that communication.
Mm-hmm.
And do that little screenshot. Let yourself know who you're dealing with so that you don't make yourself wrong all the time.
But sometimes we are, right?
Yeah, I mean, right. But you can't tell that until you figure this out.
Yeah, it's very hard to tell. And like what, you know, do we project onto other people too? I mean, if we're in a bad mood, I'm sure we do, right?
Yes. And that's when it gets really embarrassing.
Yeah, I feel that.
Because that's when I blurt, you know, that's when I say things that I don't want to say. It's like I reach a point where I just like let it all go, you know, and or I'm sitting in a meeting and all of a sudden I hear myself saying the things that someone else is refusing to say and things like that. And it gets really embarrassing.
The story of my life, I think. You've got to figure that out.
What happens with you, Sam? What have you noticed?
Yeah, I just, things build up and then I'll blurt things out and I'll pick up and I'll expect the person who I know I'm probably like tapping into that agrees with me to be like, yeah, I agree. And then they don't. And then I'm pissed.
Right.
Because I know they feel the same way.
Most people are not honest about their feelings.
Mm-hmm.
I would say, again, 99% of the time, if you ask someone to identify their feelings or let you know how they're feeling, they're not going to tell you how they really feel, or they may not even know it.
Mm-hmm.
If, you know, I've been working as a medical intuitive and healer for 40 years now, and so I've had the benefit of having 40 to 50,000 people sit in front of me and get the feedback that's real so that I've been able to identify this stuff and really see what's going on. But in everyday life, you don't get the feedback you need.
Mm-hmm.
And you do need feedback. Just like you said, Sam, it's like if you feel what someone's feeling and they deny it, then you end up feeling crazy.
Yeah.
And then that builds up and it just, you just turn into a hilaria. You know, it's like, gaslighting? Is that the term these days?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That is like a form of gaslighting that you end up being the crazy person, and you aren't the crazy person. You're perceiving the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And so that unwinding this takes a little while to be able to get the feedback that you need to understand this, which is why being in these classes with other empaths is really helpful.
I had a question about that.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously in the position you're in, you're a medical intuitive, you can get that feedback.
Mm-hmm.
But for us, if somebody is denying those things, how do you eventually learn to trust your own ability to say, right, this is what I'm sensing and this is accurate?
Yes. So you have to start with assuming that you're picking up a person correctly.
Okay.
And here's what I do, because, okay, I have my friends and family, and they're not like my clients where I get a good view. And so they'll deny things. And so what I do is I'll say, okay, I'm feeling like this right now. Like, let's see, my husband has migraines from a car accident he was in. And when he has migraines, my liver hurts. I mean, it's crazy, but that's what happens. And so I'll say to him, you know, my liver's hurting. You should go rest a little. And he'll say, no, I need to work and I don't have a headache, blah, blah, blah. But what happens is you start correlating things with people close to you. And you just watch and observe. And you may feel something that's not the exact same thing as another person feels. Like you might feel insecure when another person's feeling angry.
Okay.
But once you're around that person enough times and you see that you feel insecure and they look a little upset, you know that pattern then. And you can then project that the next time you feel insecure, they may not be around you, but they may be doing the same anger dance somewhere else. You may be picking it up. So it's a matter of almost like scientifically making these parallels around people that are close to you so that you start understanding your language of your instrument.
I'm getting the idea.
Okay. And it takes a little while, and it takes some openness and some like real serious recording of what your experience is. But you're literally scientifically going about this in terms of matching how someone's feeling when you can see how they're feeling and how you're feeling at the time. And so when you correlate that many times over, then you start trusting that, okay, I'm feeling this, they must be feeling this. Now that doesn't mean you have the right to even invade their privacy, but it does give you the insight into you about why you're feeling like you're feeling. And this is part of that mirror nature. And I'm going to take it one step farther, because in the spiritual teachings, in the traditional spiritual teachings, hold on one second, I'm going to bring this forward. I want to find the right language for this. Learning how to detach from your reactions is a spiritual teaching. So learning to be able to witness and watch your reactions in life is a spiritual practice. And so as an empath, you can easily see how you change from when you're sitting in your office to when you're sitting in the bathroom to when you're interacting with this person to that person and that person. And you can watch yourself. And that's a study in becoming detached. Because if you change that often, you realize that you can't stay attached to that or you'll go crazy. And then that detachment leads you back to your truer self. It eventually does that. But it's the spiritual practice that becomes a very important evolution in your spiritual development. But watching yourself like that and not assuming that if you feel insecure, you're the insecure one.
Mm-hmm.
But we're still stuck because we can say to someone, how are you feeling? And they'll say, great. And we still don't have the language and the validation as an empath to say very often, you know, well, I'm pretty empathic. I'm picking this up. I'd really like to know, am I correct or not? That's not part of our common vocabulary yet. It's not part of our communication system. But let's say, like Sari and Sam, you're good friends. Mm-hmm. You can test that out with each other.
Yeah.
Okay. And so if you have a good friend that's willing to practice that with you or at least be honest with you, mm-hmm. that would be great. But I am saying it is a bind. How many of you are physical empaths? Like you pick up the pain of other people. Physical pain.
Sometimes I pick up my husband's pain. I'm not sure if I pick up other people's pain, but I'm pretty sure that I do, but I'm not clear. But when my husband's hernia acts up, I get a pain in my ovary.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And that's crazy to me.
Yeah. Okay, that's a perfect example. Where does he feel the pain?
He feels the pain in a similar location on his body.
So it's in the lower back.
No, his pain is, I feel it in the front.
Uh-huh.
And I feel it in the front close to my pubic bone, and he feels it in the front close to his pubic bone.
Oh, so it's exactly the same.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But there are times when out of nowhere I have a headache, mm-hmm. and I just don't believe that it's my headache.
Right.
But I haven't been able to pinpoint.
Okay. So what I do when these annoying things start interfering with my life is that's when I come back to the grounding.
Okay.
And come back to feeling my body. And I literally say, I do have 2 feet. I do have 2 knees. Like I'm re-owning my body.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. You know, I have 2 hips, I have 2 arms, I have a chest, I have a belly, I have a back. It's like I have to say that to myself because I'm like dispersed into the air and I'm picking up everything. And so I have to physically come back to my own presence and my own body to first separate off from everything and everyone. Okay, now, when you've lived with someone for many years, it becomes, well, our biologies sync up. You know, it's the old women in a dorm start, you know, having their periods together. Mm-hmm. The same thing happens with a husband, with partners and marriages and girlfriends and boyfriends and girlfriends and girlfriends and boyfriends and boyfriends. It all starts to sync up. So in the early 70s, I read this study that was so enlightening. At the Mayo Clinic, they were tracking how long married couples, their physiology started tracking together. So they put the husband in one room and the wife in another building in another a room in another building on the medical campus. And they hooked them up to the EEGs, EKGs, and all the different things that they could measure. And they even did blood work. And they showed the husband photos that would evoke an emotional reaction, you know, war and things like that. They left the wife alone. They didn't show her anything. They had her twiddling her thumbs in the other room. Okay. Do you know that her blood pressure went up simultaneously with his? It wasn't even, there wasn't a split second of lag time.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yes. So every time he had a physiological reaction, she had the same one. And they'd been married 20 years. Oh. So there's an effect that occurs, whether you're empathic or not, where our bodies start to sync up with each other.
Uh-huh.
And we start experiencing things that are not necessarily the root cause in our own body. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of that. It was really scary for me to hear that originally. Mm-hmm. And I find for myself that I really need to sleep in a bed all by myself.
We did that this year. We had to do that this year.
Yeah. I need to have that space where I'm not being influenced when I'm sleeping by another person's body. So that,
much better.
Yeah.
So Sarah, is that why I'm still single after all these years? Is that the answer?
It could be. I mean, there could be, you know, a subtle thing that says, oh, I don't want to be influenced by that, you know. My poor husband has to do an hour of Tai Chi before he even comes close to the bed. And that's because he understands. I mean, a husband that wouldn't understand or a partner that wouldn't understand what it means to get your energy and your being settled down and organized and calm, you don't even have a vocabulary to share with that person, you know. So it can be very complicating. So there we go. We've covered a lot tonight. Mm-hmm. So let's see. What did I give you did I give you an assignment?
Not yet.
The screenshot. We have to
yes.
take a screenshot.
Oh, okay.
Yes, I knew I did. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's what I want. Okay, so I want you to practice the screenshot. I want you to practice the I don't know, I don't care. You're not allowed to say I don't know, I don't care. Mm-hmm. I want you to practice acceptable, unacceptable. You don't, and if you don't do all of these, just do, you know, pick one that feels comfortable. Mm-hmm. You can do all of them. And I want you to listen to the grounding meditation and keep grounding.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That was a huge help this week.
Was it?
Yeah. Yeah, oh, absolutely. I was almost in pain when I started it. I could feel all the pain in my body. And then as I did the meditation, it dissipated. I could feel the flow of energy. It was such a good release. So thank you for that.
That's fantastic. So I do that 24/7. Mm. I'm hooked into the earth 24/7. So make that your default practice.
Yeah.
Okay. So that every time you come back to yourself, you automatically go down to your feet instead of up and out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then do you want us to also do the whole thing of, you know, working if there's someone you know and they're annoyed, then check in with your body and see if you're feeling it somewhere.
Yes. Yeah, that's going to become a lifelong practice.
Okay.
And if there's someone that will actually, like if you could say to a friend, I have this assignment this week. Would you mind if I'm sensing something, if I check in with you, would you be willing to be honest with me and help me get some feedback on this? That might even, you know, if that's possible, That would be helpful. And then the other thing was being selective about who you reach out to help. Mm-hmm. So you remember this, you're self-defining. You're making more room in your life for you to emerge. And it's a lot of work for an empath. I'm not trying to fool you about this. This is, empaths have to work extra hard to get clear. Mm-hmm. And so you need to spend a good hour a day clearing and breathing and opening up the space throughout your whole system to come back to yourself. And it's extra work to be an empath. But then once you get past this beginning part where you really understand what's going on, then you get to the point where you start developing the abilities that you have and interpreting the information that's coming in. Sure. And then you like have superpowers that really work in your favor. You learn boundaries, you learn ethics. Ethics are a big part of this, because one thing empaths can do is really be invasive in other people's space. Mm-hmm. And that's not what we want. I'm continually saying to myself, I really don't want to know that about you, right? But there's a lot to this. I mean, I could teach for years to probably, it's like really a 3-year program to really develop the abilities to a point where you're on the positive end of this. That's why I have the year-long program that people take, a couple of years in a row, actually. Because it takes that long.
Mm-hmm. I can see that. Definitely. Yeah. Wow.
So, yeah. But it ends up in a good place, really good place, because as much as you can merge with another person, you can merge with God. You can merge with the infinite. Mm-hmm. You can emerge with the light, with the healing ability, with the healing energies. So you're taking those merging abilities and redirecting them into this infinite, beautiful source of energy that enlivens you all the time. Mm-hmm. So that ability turned a different direction, turns into a huge blessing.
Thank you.
So have fun practicing this week, and I'll look forward to hearing all about it.